Today's episode of In the Circle on D1 Softball is dedicated to the life and memory of Southern Illinois catcher Courtney Schoolcraft. Courtney battled a long fight with cancer and won her fight last Wednesday alongside her family at Silver Cross Hospital in New Lenox, Illinois. Schoolcraft was a catcher for the Screaming Eagles in the Division II era. She was a part of a team that went up winning the national championship on the Division II side. And Southern Illinois showed their love and their appreciation for Courtney, who lost. The Screaming Eagles put out a tweet a few days ago saying that USI Athletics and USI Softball are saddened to learn of the passing of former player Courtney Schoolcraft after a long battle with cancer. The Screaming Eagles extend condolences to the family and loved ones of Courtney Schoolcraft. The funeral services will take place on Sunday, the 13th, and they will be looking to honor Courtney as a battle for first place in the OVC as they take on Eastern Illinois. We send our thoughts and prayers to Coach Sue Kunkel, her teammates, her family, her friends, and all of those who were impacted by the life of Courtney Schoolcraft. Take it away from us far too soon. Courtney, we love you. We miss you. And send our best to our guardian angels, Jerry Ann and Alex, in that great dugout in the sky. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we start today's episode of In a Circle on D1 Softball.
This is In a Circle on D1 Softball.
And we welcome you to this edition of In the Circle on D1 Softball. We assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that we won't squeeze your strike zone like what happened in Baton Rouge on Wednesday night. My name is Victor Anderson. You will hear from Eric Lopez in just a moment. Lots to get to on today's edition of the pod. Eric's latest bracketology is out. I got some questions to ask him about who is hosting, and most importantly, who he has in and out of his field of 64. Some interesting results on Wednesday, including a former friend of ours knocking off an ACC top three foe on the road. And yes, I will talk about what the heck happened in Baton Rouge on a strike zone that apparently disappeared in the eighth inning. Plus, we got not one, but two interviews to share with you on today's show. Later on, we will talk to Marist head coach Joe Asanio. His Red Foxes are on top of the MAC entering this weekend. He'll talk about their season so far and being involved in a match with the new undisputed WWE Universal Champion, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. And we will also talk to the reigning D1 Softball National Freshman of the Week and making a strong case for National Freshman of the Year, Penn State pitcher / slugger Bridget Namath will be joining us in just a few moments to talk about her Nittany Lions off to one of their best starts in program history, and closing in on something that hasn't been done in Happy Valley in nearly three decades. We're going to talk about that on today's episode. And plus, the weekend series that will have the biggest impact on Eric's bracketology next weekend. All that coming up on today's edition of In the Circle. Make sure you follow our podcast on Twitter /X and all social media. Follow us on your favorite podcasting platform. Rate us and review us 5 stars. If we rate us 4 stars, we tend to believe that you are a hater and that your strike zone shrinks after the 7th inning. Don't forget to subscribe to our In the Circle YouTube channel. We got some big things coming up with the postseason just around the corner. And, of course, my personal segment on our In the Circle YouTube channel. Yeah, I said it. That will be coming up this weekend. If you're a fan of the sport, you may want to listen or not listen to what I have to say to you. One thing we do know is a team that has made the biggest jump and the biggest splash that we have not seen or expected in this year, 2024, are the Penn State Nittany Lions, led by Clarissa Crowell. Penn State off to a 28-8 start, 7-2 in the Big Ten. That's off to their best start in Big Ten play since 2016, and are 3 wins away from matching their win total from last year, and are on pace to have the third straight 30-win season, which will be the first time that's happened in Penn State since they have 5 straight 30-plus win seasons from 1999 to 2003. One of the biggest reasons behind the resurgence of the Nittany Lions in the Big Ten and the national landscape is our D1 softball freshman of the week, Bridget Namath. And she has had herself a rookie season that will go down in Happy Valley lore. And what she did in Lincoln, Nebraska to get the Nittany Lions an extra inning victory on that Sunday, doing it with her bat to extend the game to extra innings, a big reason why Penn State is where they are right now, looking to make the NCAA tournament. Earlier this week, Eric had a chance to talk to the freshman about her team's success so far and what she has done so far to get herself on the national map and what led her to Coach Crowell in Happy Valley. Here now, the D1 Softball National Freshman of the Week, Bridget Namath, here in the circle on D1 Softball.
Joining us now, she is just won for the second time in a few weeks, the D1 Softball Freshman of the Year. She's won also her fourth Big Ten Freshman of the Year. She's 17-1 on the circle with 1.17 ERA, helping lead Penn State to their best start in program history, 28-8, 7-2 in the Big Ten. I speak of Bridget Namath, the freshman phenom, joining us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I want to kind of get you back to that Nebraska series, a wild series where you win the series, but Sunday in particular. And oddly, I'm going to ask you about an at-bat that you had. Top of the seventh, and it was the biggest game. You're down in the game, and you hit your first hit, which is a two-run homer to tie the game up. Just take me through that at-bat.
So my at-bats before, I saw a lot of pitches from this pitcher already, so I kind of knew what she was throwing, and it was a long at-bat. I was battling, she was throwing pitches, I was fouling them off, and then it got to 3-2, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to hit it. I'm just going to swing at a good pitch. So then I swung at a good pitch, and it happened to hit it. So
Did you know it was gone when I hit it?
Yeah, I kind of did. Like you could see in the video, I like put my hands up, because you know when you hit a home run, you just feel it, so I kind of felt it, and yeah.
You had 14 strikeouts in that game and a career high to win the series. What's that like to not only hit a home run, but then you get the win, you win the series. Describe those feelings of that had to be right up there as well, a confidence booster.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely my favorite Big Ten series, but it was just an awesome feeling. Like just the energy. We were obviously away too, so just our team's energy was awesome. And yeah, it was a really cool feeling. But it was a really tough fought series, and that was a great way to end it.
Describe your team for those that maybe haven't followed you on a daily basis. How would you describe Penn State Softball 2024?
I would describe our team as just a family. Like, we're a family. We love each other through wins, through losses, no matter what. I think we all work really well together, and we're a really gritty team, too. So, I mean, you could see, like, we fight till the very end. We've won some really good games with that, and I think it's just our culture that makes us able to win these games because we just support each other, we cheer each other on, and everyone has a role in the team, and it takes all of us to win games.
Let's talk a little bit about you coming into Penn State. Obviously, they had a great pitcher in Bailey Partial, who set a lot of records last year. First, did you watch Bailey Partial pitch? Because I would assume you were committed, you were ready to go to Penn State. You see her do what she did. What was your impression of her when you saw her play from afar?
Yeah, I mean, she's an awesome pitcher. I watched a lot of games. I watched a lot of Big Ten games last year. I committed pretty late. So once I committed, obviously, though, I watched all the games I could. And she was an amazing pitcher. And yeah, they did really well with her and all the other pitchers, too.
I remember in Boca, I think it was maybe opening weekend or so, when you beat Arkansas. Mm-hmm. How big of a confidence booster was that for you personally and for the team?
Yeah, I mean, coming in, I was nervous going into that game, but Paige and Maddie, the other pitchers, had already started off really well. So I was like, we got this. And we were talking about it from the beginning of the game. We just had a feeling that we were going to win that game. And obviously, it was a huge upset for us. But at the beginning of the game, we're like, we're going to win this game. We're going to win this game. So it was a huge confidence booster, I think, for the whole team because it really showed us we can do these things. We can do big things. So it was an amazing win. And the feelings were just awesome. It was an awesome way to start a season.
Describe playing for Coach Crowell.
Coach is an amazing coach. You talk about confidence. She really instills confidence in her players. And I mean, she's great to play for. She's a great coach, and we all really love her.
What got you into playing softball as you grew up?
I have two older sisters and an older brother, and they all play softball. My two sisters play softball in college, and my brother plays baseball. So we're a really sport family. And I played a bunch of sports growing up. I played volleyball, I played soccer, I played basketball. But softball was just the one that stuck. And I think I really liked playing with my sisters too, because we would always go to the field and hit. My sisters would bullpen catch for me. So I always had someone to play softball with. So just got to be something I loved. And then once it got to a time to pick a sport, I'd pick softball.
Your two sisters, Melissa and Virginia, I believe play at Concordia Irvine, right? Where
Yes, they
Crystal
do.
Rosenthal is the head coach. They have a great program there in D2. Describe growing up together. You mentioned you're all athletes. You all like competition. How competitive did you all get with each other?
Yes, very competitive in anything. We're all just so competitive. Even my parents too. We go play pickleball. We're all trying to win. We're all like yelling at each other. We just everything we're competitive in. So it's really awesome to grow up with that, and like just really made me have the competitive spirit I do because I never want to lose. And they just like built me into what I am. I don't even want to lose to my sister, no matter what we're playing. Like I just have the competitive spirit, and it was just so much fun playing with them growing up.
I
My
would
big
imagine, yeah, you don't want to hear about it if you lost because you never hear the end of it
Yeah,
there. Did
exactly.
I hear that you all play pickleball?
Yeah, we play pickleball.
How did you pick? I mean, that's become a popular, huge sport now, pickleball. I always watch the celebrities even play it, where Steffi Graf recently played it with Andre Agassi and stuff. How did you all pick up pickleball?
Well, my dad actually joined a pickleball club. He can't play any other sports now, but he's in a pickleball club and he started playing and he really got us into it. Like we would just go to the court with him one day and now we all love it and we play a lot as family. So it's fun.
It's pretty amazing. How did that competitiveness growing up around that maybe has helped you succeed here at this level so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really grateful for my siblings, but it was just always instilled in me, like, I want to win, I want to win. So, I don't know. I feel like that's a big part of who I am today. Like, I couldn't do without my siblings, so.
How'd you end up deciding to go to Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, the distance is obviously a little bit far, so it wasn't exactly what I expected, but I came to visit and I just fell in love with the campus. I really loved the coaches and I also really liked the weather too. I kind of like the seasons that we have, which is kind of a rare answer, but I just fell in love with school and I couldn't imagine going anywhere else.
Do you remember the first time you walked on campus?
Yeah, I do. It
What
was,
was it like?
I actually came during the summer too, so it was warm, but it was just the moment I walked on campus, I was like, this is awesome. We were driving around. I just loved the feel of it. The football is awesome. I saw the football stadium. I was like in awe of everything we have here. So it was just like I stepped on and I was like, I want to go here.
Have
This
you
is beautiful.
attended a Penn State football game, more specifically the Whiteout game?
Yes, I did go to the Whiteout game and we actually had recruits. So we got to go on the field with them, which was really awesome. Yeah, so it's surreal. There's just nothing like it.
I was gonna say, what's it like? I mean, everybody says that's like the event. Everybody circles the whiteout. Having gone through it as an experience, what describe that experience? What's it like to be at a Penn State football game in a whiteout, which is among many people's bucket list when it comes to sports?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. The stadium's packed, so loud you can barely hear anything. And just like really that culture of Penn State football is just really amazing. You especially see that at the Whiteout game. But I actually been to two too, because I went on my official visit and then I went to one this year. But it's just amazing, especially being on the field before and like the players like running out, like the music, everything about it. It's definitely my favorite sporting event that I've ever been to.
I props to you for getting two out of it and still more to
Yeah.
come.
I know. Exciting.
Which teammates has taken you under your wing? Maybe a veteran player. Who are some of the veteran leaders on this team that maybe it's helped you kind of through get, you know, learn not just you know, college, you know, playing softball, but also the academic side. You're balancing both.
Yeah, I mean, we have some amazing girls on our team. Smart. We have really good leaders too. Kate Morrison is one of our fifth year seniors. She really took all the freshmen under her wing and really taught us like the way of things. But I'd say Kate Morrison, Amanda, M, those are all like all of the upperclassmen are great. And I think they've all really been really good role models for us to look up to. And they know what it's like playing college softball. So it's been really great to learn from them and like in academics too with everything.
As softball fans get to know you, what's a couple things you want them to know about you as a player? What do they want to know about Bridget Namath that people should know about?
Bridget Namath, I don't know. I love to compete. I don't know. I love to win. I just love to play, honestly. I don't even care where I'm playing. I could be playing outfield and I love to play. So I just, every time I step on the field, I love it.
You're the type to just like to compete at anything, aren't you? I feel like you're one that if there's a race to the bus, you're right in the mix, in the middle of that.
Well, I don't know how fast I am, but at least I don't know if I'm winning, but I'll be in the race.
That's fair. when you look at obviously describing you as a player, for those that haven't seen you play, describe yourself as a type of player if they watch you play.
Yeah, well, I usually try to keep my composure. I mean, I get excited sometimes, but we've always talked about, especially like my dad, who's always like came to all of my games, watching me play my whole life. So he kind of really instilled in me like just being even, just being level and trying to keep your composure. Like we always talk about a runner gets on base, you get the next one out. So I'd say a big thing I try to focus on is keeping my composure no matter what. Yeah. And we also always talk about let the defense work. It doesn't matter how you get outs as long as you get them. It doesn't matter if it's a ball at the warning track and it's an out. Like, it doesn't matter. So that's what I try to think about, too. But yeah, I'd say a big thing is composure that I try to work on.
You've won many accolades as a freshman, more than most Penn State softball players ever have. Do you remember the first time you won the D1 Softball Freshman of the Week a few weeks back, or when you won the Big Ten Freshman of the Week and those accolades? Do you remember that first time you won it earlier this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
How'd you react?
I was really excited, first of all. I mean, we have an amazing team. I wouldn't be even getting anything like this if I wasn't on the team that I am. So I'm really grateful for all of them. But when I first saw, like, the first weekend, I started crying. I was calling my family, and they were all crying because it's not something that you expect, and I'm just really grateful for all of it.
Did you have favorite athletes growing up, or a softball player, or any athletes that kind of inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, Jenny Finch is a big one. But in recent years, it's really been Montana Fouts. I love watching her play. So she's been a big inspiration to me. So I just love to watch softball, but I would say Montana Fouts.
It's a great choice. I just got to spend time with her. She did an opening night dinner. She's a class act, yeah. So she's pretty good. Moving forward now, you still got a lot of softball to go. You're hosting Michigan State this weekend. What's going to be some of the keys for your team to keep this going and move forward to possibly a Big Ten championship, obviously, contender, and then obviously, hopefully, the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about 1-0, so we try to focus on just the next game ahead. So, Big Ten's is obviously coming up, and that's a huge thing. Regionals is our goal. We try to focus on 1-0, so we're talking about just Michigan State, first game Friday, and going 1-0 on that day. So, I'm really excited. Like, our team, we obviously have a lot of momentum from last weekend, like, winning such a big series. So we're just trying to focus on what's ahead of us, and, like, we're excited, but we're trying to stay within the moment, stay in the present.
Speak of your catchers, because that's a big part of your success, too, as you mentioned it. Usually a successful catcher helps a successful pitcher.
Yeah. Gabby's amazing. She's caught most of the games this year, and just, I love having her behind the plate. She's like steady. Like, she makes you feel calm. She really cheers on her pitchers. She's a great catcher. I couldn't ask for anything else.
Who is a player or two on the team that you're like, you know what? Make sure you bring up this player when you talk about Penn State, because without these particular players, we wouldn't be as successful. That maybe doesn't get the notoriety or the credit.
Yeah. I mean, I think Gabby's a huge one. She's really a leader on our team too. I would say Maddie Seidel is a huge person that she calls all, like, a lot of the pitches. She does all the charts. She's just such a smart person, and really, like, we couldn't do without her. Also a huge play. I don't know if you guys know about this, but in the Nebraska series last week, there was a play where the runner stole second, and actually a girl in our dugout, Lydia Spaulding, she saw the runner leave and she goes, "She's early, she's early." So she like made a huge play that really got the moment in our way. So that was awesome too. And really every person on the team is important. Everyone has a role and we always talk about that. And we need all 22 of us to do it.
Very tight group by what it sounds like.
Yes.
Last question. You got a lot of softball in your career ahead of you, but what's your goals after beyond softball?
Well, my goals are following softball. I would love professional softball if I could, but that is still is kind of in softball. But I majored in agricultural business, so I would like to do something with agriculture, go into sales, and yeah.
Well, good. We got a lot of softball between now and then. So in the meantime, let's enjoy this. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time. Congrats on the success to this point. Good luck the rest of the way. Thanks for talking to us, and good luck to the rest of the season, and hope to talk to you down the road.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Bridget for taking some time out to chat with Eric this past week in regards to a phenomenal season that she's been having so far. Thanks to Nick Whitley, Assistant Director of Strategic Communications for Penn State, for setting up that interview. Now, Penn State, they are looking to continue their upward momentum. They got a three-game series this weekend as they take on Michigan State, part of their alumni weekend. That will be taking place at Happy Valley. That'll be on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The alumni game will be on Friday, April 13th at 4:30. For full information, go to gopsusports.com and see if the Nittany Lions can indeed get to that 30-win plateau, which will be the third straight 30-win season. First time they would have done that since 1999 through 2003, and three wins away from surpassing, equaling their win total from last year. By the way, the 28-8 record that the Nittany Lions have right now, that is their best mark through 36 games in program history. Now, prior to their game on Sunday versus Michigan State, they're going to have the Jared Box Project back to Bear Field, and they're asking fans to consider bringing a thoughtful tour donation with the list. There'll be a list on the Penn State softball Twitter/S account at Penn State SB. They'll have full details of what toys you should bring for the Jared Box and Lace Up event. That'll be taking place Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. for the final game of the series versus Michigan State. So what a story Penn State has been in 2024. A team that's also trying to make a name for themselves and trying to get themselves to the NCAA tournament are the Red Foxes of Marist. They're currently leading the MAC. After taking two games versus Siena, their Wednesday afternoon game was canceled due to Mother Nature. So they'll be enjoying the weekend off before they get ready for a big non-conference doubleheader versus Lehigh on Saturday. Coming up on In the Circle, Marist head coach Joe Asanio will be joining us very shortly to talk about his Red Foxes and wrestling with a family member of the current WWE Undisputed Universal Champion. All that and more coming up on this edition of In the Circle. Now, you talk about players making impact. We just had Bridget Namath on the podcast here. Amanda Lorenz and Jenna Becerra had themselves a very fun guest on the latest episode of the D1 Softball Podcast, as they were joined by Viviana Martinez from Texas. And because, Casey, if y'all have been living under a rock, the Longhorns knocked off Oklahoma 2-3 this past weekend in Austin. So Viviana Martinez talks with Amanda and Jenna about that and Longhorns' outlook for the remainder of 2024. Make sure you watch that interview on d1softball.com and listen to the interview with Amanda and Jenna on the latest episode of the D1 Softball Podcast, presented by S2 Cognition on your favorite podcasting platform. One team that may have a chance to play Texas if they get to the postseason are the Red Foxes of Marist. Maris comes into this weekend a very confident and playing some very strong softball. They took two in their series versus Siena. They were supposed to play the third game on Wednesday, but as I referenced earlier, Mother Nature said, nah, you're not playing any softball on Wednesday. So they just had to settle for the two-game sweep versus the Saints. Maris right now leading the MAG. They got a big series coming up down the road versus Iona, but they have a big doubleheader versus Lehigh, who's trying to knock out Boston in the Patriot League this weekend. That's their and Maris 26-11 on the season. The man who's leading the Maris program, Joe Asadio, who had himself a very fascinating story. If you've been following our podcast, listening to our podcast, we've had him on several times before. He pitched in Major League Baseball for the New York Yankees. He was a professional wrestler. So he has a very diverse background. And all by the way, he's a hell of a softball coach. I saw him in person last year when Maris played Iowa in a tournament hosted by USF. Coach Asadio talks about his team in 2024 as well as his very long road to be a softball head coach and one of the best in the MAC. Here now, Maris head coach, Joe Asadio, here at Inner Circle on D1 Softball.
Joining us now, he is the head coach of Maris, of course, the defending champions of the MAC with two A's, winning that automatic bid last year, getting to the NCAA tournament. He's a former Yankee relief pitcher, also former wrestler. And aside, he's got a fascinating journey life. But he's a heck of a head coach right now. He's got a team on top of the league in a very in the middle of the big stretch. As we record this, they had just finished a doubleheader against Siena. I speak of our good friend Joe Asadio joining us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball. Man, you have the most unique profile that we've ever had on the show, but it's good to have you back on.
Appreciate it, Eric. Thanks for having me.
All right, as we're recording this, you had just finished playing Siena in a very big, important doubleheader. You get a split, you lose a tight one-run game in the first game of this doubleheader on the road. Then you bounce back and run-ruled them in the second game. I know you wanted both games. We talked a little bit about that off there. I was following that those games very closely because it's big in the standings, as we'll get to in a moment, about how tight the league is. But kind of your overall thoughts with how the doubleheader played out, plus the uniqueness on how the conference you all play your conference games.
Yeah. So, you know, today was obviously happy to come out of there with a split after losing a tough game. You know, we lost 2-1 in the first game, and you know, we had some chances, didn't get a timely hit when we needed it, and you know, those are always tough. You know, when you put yourself in positions to win and don't get it done. But in the second game, I thought our kids really had good approaches at the plate, and you know, the pitcher that pitched against us, she's a fifth-year senior, and you know, she's been very tough on us in the past, and you know, we hit three home runs off of her in one inning, and you know, we chased her, and you know, we haven't been able to do that against her in a while. And so I was just really, really pleased and proud of the effort we put forth in that second game, especially with our approaches at the plate. I don't know why I can't hear you, Eric.
Oh, I got you now. That's all right. It was me. That's because I produce myself sometimes and I mute myself and I forget. But I was going to ask you about, do you feel that your team's got a target on their back? You're the defending champions. You won the automatic bid. As we record this after the Siena doubleheader on late Tuesday night, you're still on top of the league. Do you feel there's been a target this year? What's it been like this year?
100%. And I told the girls this year, the hunter has become the hunted. And, you know, we are, you know, in everybody's crosshairs. And, you know, when we lose a game, you know, teams, you know, cheer as if, you know, they beat Oklahoma. And that can be good and bad. You know, it's good that you get the respect from the league that, you know, they just beat a very good team. But, you know, sometimes, you know, the kids can get complacent and think they can just, you know, throw their gloves out on the field and win games. And, you know, unfortunately, games aren't won on paper and you still have to get it done because our league has a ton of parity and anybody in our league can beat anybody. And it doesn't matter 1 through 11. It does not matter. Anybody can beat anybody in our league.
You're 26-11 now as we talk. You won 29 games all of last year. So clearly you're a better team than even last year. Did winning that tournament and making and getting a taste of the NCAA tournament, did that almost raise the bar and the confidence from the returners?
Yeah, you know, I think that they got that taste of what it's like to be there. And, you know, the goal was to repeat. And otherwise, you know, what are we doing if we're not trying to win this? And so, you know, we really kind of got after it from day one and, you know, played a very good fall. And then, you know, we did some different tournaments this year. You know, you never know when you sign up for a tournament who's going to be there. You know, last year we had a very difficult spring break, you know, where we played Texas, Iowa, Penn State, Illinois, South Florida twice, Lehigh twice. And just I think that that seasoned us, you know, even though we only won 29 games last year, that really, you know, made us better. Taking a bunch of losses on spring break and just knowing that, hey, listen, you know, we played some really good teams and we played some of those teams very tight. You know, we lost a one-run game to Iowa in extra innings. You know, we lost a two-run game to Illinois and, you know, played South Florida twice, very, very tough. So, you know, we were prepared, you know, for the conference tournament. And, you know, when we got to the conference tournament, we just kind of had all pistons running, and Kylie Myers stepped up for us when Calista Phippen, you know, our number one pitcher, went down with a knee injury at the tournament. And, you know, we kind of just rode Kylie to the championship, and, you know, she was phenomenal.
You're an interesting stretch here. You just played CN on the road here on a Tuesday. You're now going to host Lehigh non-conference, a team that's undefeated in their league, in the Patriot League. They were just in the NCAAs 2 years ago. They're going to be a big threat to Boston in the Patriot League there in that league. You're going to host them Saturday. Then next week.
We have to go back to Siena tomorrow for the third game.
That's right. And you got to go back to Siena. Thank you for reminding me as we record Wednesday night. That's just right. Your schedule, it's fat. Just explain the scheduling formula. From a conference standpoint, because it's fascinating to me, like you said, you're playing Siena here. You're going to play Iona next weekend or next week during the week. It's not the traditional weekend conference series. Just explain this, because this is a fascinating stretch for you.
So what has happened is in the past, our conference only did doubleheaders. Everybody played everybody. Now, the conference went to a three-game series because we were one of the few conferences in the country that didn't do a three-game series. So we decided to do a doubleheader and then a single game. I know some of the conferences will do like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but we decided, you know, just for expenses and just trying to keep have the opportunity to play as many games as possible, we did doing a doubleheader or a single game. And you have 3 days to try to get those three games in, but one being a doubleheader, the other being a single. Next year, there's going to be two more teams added to our conference. We don't have enough weekends to play everybody. So these midweek triple headers are the only way that we're able to try to get these games in. And obviously in the Northeast, we're at the mercy of the weather and hope to get these games in.
For those that don't know, who are the two teams that will be joining the league next year?
So next year, Merrimack and Sacred Heart will be joining the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. And so we will be going from 11 to 13.
Oh, man. Welcome. Everybody's growing in the leagues. It's unbelievable. How will that affect your scheduling, if at all?
So what they're going to do is, believe it or not, and there's been some arguments and disagreements with when we would start our conference play, but it looks as though conference play is going to start in mid-March next year here in the Northeast, which is obviously a crapshoot, and hopefully we will be able to get games in, because one of the other things that we have now in our conference is we don't have enough days to make up games. So if you don't get your games in, they're gone. You don't play them.
Will you try to play everybody? Is it one of those things will be split up where you play certain teams? I mean, that's tight.
I believe it's going to go on a rotating schedule. Okay. And the schedule hasn't come out yet for next year. Sure. So I'm kind of anxious to see what it's going to look like, because you have a couple of teams in our conference that their fields that they play on are multiple use fields. So for instance, Canisius has men's and women's lacrosse, baseball, and softball that all use the same field. Manhattan has men's and women's lacrosse and softball. So there are, teams in our league that have multi-use facilities.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. We're going to have to get you back next year on to see how it's going with the new look there. But let's talk about your team. Let's go about your team this year. I want to start with your offense. You're hitting over 300 as a team as we do the 313 on the year. Who are some of your leaders and standouts offensively? Certainly one that jumps out to me is McDonald, who, as we record this, has 12 homers, 47 RBIs. You got Haley with 7 homers, 36 RBIs. But you have others. It seems like you've got it pretty spread out. Just talk about your offense identity and some of the players that make it work.
Yeah, well, last year we did not have Maya McDonald. She was out for the year with a torn labrum. And what was fun was to win it without her and then getting her back. She's, one of the top players in our conference. And what she brings to the table is just a 5-tool player that, she can hit for average. She can hit for power. She can run. She feels well. She does everything well. And what I think has happened is with her coming back healthy and just kind of picking up where she left off 2 years ago, it's just made everybody around her better. And, right now our top five, Peyton Pusey, in the leadoff spot, Maya hitting second. We have Maddie Pleasance, who was the conference player of the year last year, hitting third. We have Haley R, who was the rookie of the year last year, hitting fourth. And we have Alyssa Grupp hitting fifth right now. And, all five of those right now are hitting in the high 300s, low 400s. And, so right now we're hoping that the bottom of that lineup can just kind of pick up where we left off. We picked up a transfer from Canisius last year, Sophia Recrocio, who's hitting over 300. She's hitting in the number 9 spot to turn over that lineup as much as we can.
Let's talk about your pitching staff a little bit. You got a staff with an ERA of 2.71. Kylie Myers, 1.99 ERA as we do this, 11-5 on the season. You got Anna with 12 wins. Just talk about your staff. You've got certainly at least 3 arms you've used in a consistent basis and have started games for it.
Yeah. Kylie, like I said earlier, she was the one who kind of pitched us to the conference championship last year when Calista went down. And then, Anna Sidlowski, she's a freshman who has just stepped right in and she has exceeded our expectations. She's been phenomenal for us this year. Maddie Pleasance has thrown for us and, she's done a great job. She's, been bit by some bad luck. She threw some really good games and had some, tough losses. And then we picked up another transfer, Isabella Malazzo, from St. Rose, who canceled their program. And they're playing they're closing their school. So this is their last year of sports. And so she decided to leave and come to us. So she was eligible right away because they, closed the school. And then, we also have the Connecticut Gatorade Player of the Year, Stella Blanchard, who hasn't thrown a pitch for us, who has been injured and is actually going to be having surgery on her elbow in a few weeks. But if we had her, we would be in really good shape.
Oh, can you wonder sometimes, man, if we could just be healthy one year, have everything, all the pieces together, that would be kind of fascinating, right? Like it's kind of, but at the same time, you've overcome it, which speaks volumes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Let's take me back to last year in that conference tournament. You got through the top 2 seeds in that tournament, including Canisius, who was the regular season champion. Take me through that journey in that tournament and that feeling of getting that automatic bid.
Yeah. Our first game was a really tough game against Iona, who, they're always tough. And, they had a really, one of the best pitchers in the conference that the conference has ever seen, a kid named Kara Zazzaro. And we won that game 1-0. And that was a game that I think set the tone for the rest of the tournament. And then the next game was against the Mount, which, they had been playing well, the entire year. They had a bunch of really good fifth-year kids. We ended up beating them. And that was the game where Calista, hurt her knee again and, retore her ACL celebrating after the win. So that was tough. And then Kylie just stepped up and she beat Canisius back-to-back days. And, you know, we went 4-0 and ran the table. And next thing you know, we're at the selection show watching where we were going to end up. And it was just so great to be able to go to Florida State. I mean, they just did a phenomenal job hosting. And from top to bottom, it was just such a great experience for our kids. And we'd love to go somewhere like that again this year.
When you what's that feeling like when you hosted that trophy and you were conference champions?
I think what happens, honestly, Eric, is you just, you know, reflect back on the entire year and all the work that you put in. And, you know, when I say all the work, that goes from, you know, recruiting to the fall season and, you know, the weight room, the classroom work that goes in, the fact that these kids just do such a phenomenal job. I mean, I think I'm more proud of the fact that we had a 3.71 team GPA last year. I mean, something like that is just, you know, something you can really hang your hat on, knowing that not only are you recruiting quality athletes, but you're recruiting quality kids who understand that they're there to go to school first and foremost. And, you know, a lot of schools, it's softball first, but here at Marist, it's, you know, academics first, and then, you know, using academics, using softball to get a great education.
You mentioned going to Tallahassee. You were set there with Florida State. Gave them a game for a while. I think you kind of pulled away late, but it was right there. And then you were really right there. You're a base hit away from perhaps eliminating South Carolina in that game on Saturday. So you represented very well. And I remember I spoke to you there from Tallahassee. You were pleased with the effort and how they perform, even though you didn't get any offense, but you're facing the elite here.
Yeah.
What was that like, now that you reflected on it, to be there? And not only be there, but like I said, you put a scare into South Carolina. You almost had them beat there with, again, a base hit makes the difference there. And even FSU, you were in there until obviously they had the one big inning.
Yeah. You know, we did. We played FSU twice, or FSU very tough for 4.5 innings. And then, you know, obviously, you know, their hitters are just so good. And, you know, they finally, you know, caught up to our pitching. But, you know, the next day against South Carolina, for me, that was probably my most proud moment because, you know, it's easy to kind of fold up shop. You know, obviously, we're there with three top 30 teams. It was us, South Carolina, Florida State, and UCF, who, you know, they're all in the top 30. And South Carolina had just come off a great SEC tournament. And, you know, Donnie Goldberg throwing 75 miles an hour. You know, my kids are like, hey, coach. I said, well, listen, just hopefully you run into it. And I think the fact that, you know, even South Carolina and their coaching staff just came up to me and, you know, they were just, you know, they're very proud of our team and the effort that they put forth. And like you said, I think we did put a scare in them. But moreover, I think that, you know, we just proved that, you know, our conference is good. And, you know, any team in our conference could represent this conference well. And to be able to compete against just a star-studded SEC lineup. And, you know, like you said, we had chances in that game. We had kids in scoring position multiple times in the late innings. And I think the best part was, you know, Maddie Pleasance, who was the player of the year, I don't know if you remember, I think it was in the fifth or sixth inning, she flew out and the outfielder made a great play jumping up against the wall, not quite robbing her of a home run, but it was inches away from being a home run. And, you know, that could have easily been a turning point in that game. So the fact that they had to bring Donnie in to close it out, you know, that for me was, you know, a testament to, hey, listen, they were not going to mess around with us. They took us seriously.
No, well said. I was about to say, they brought in Donnie Goldborn to finish this game against you because they just knew they couldn't hit your pitching. And because they had to play right after that against UCF, the fact they used their best arm against you is the highest compliment I could imagine, and certainly something that some of your players may not forget, like you mentioned, 75 miles. He throws hard, man. That's hard.
Yeah. Very talented young lady, yeah.
What will you take from that regional? If you get back there this year, whenever, what's one thing that you're going to remind yourself that you didn't know going in that, okay, if I'm in the next time I'm in the regional, I'm going to remember this particular part, having gone through it now?
I think what's funny, Eric, is, you know, you had said something to me before we went on air about like the pitch clock and all of the things that have been added to softball. So for instance, our conference, we don't have instant replay. We don't really use it. We don't have I don't have a big pitch clock with giant numbers. You know, we have the umpires with a little timer on their belts. So, you know, I think going into it, I would be better prepared for instant replay and making sure that I know exactly what plays I'm going to be able to challenge. You know, we had a call that went against us at Florida State that, you know, one of their runners or one of their batter runners hit a ball through our first baseman. Our first baseman went to tag her and she ran towards the dugout and around her. And, you know, I challenged the call because I thought she was out of the baseline. It ended up going against us. But when I sent that out to some umpires I knew, they all agreed with me that she should have been called out. And I still, you know, trying to find out why, you know, she wasn't. But hopefully, if anything, maybe that was a learning or teaching moment for the umpires that they could use that as a, you know, maybe a teaching video that, hey, listen, this is something that happened in the regionals and we can't let this happen again because, you know, this is not not the way the game's supposed to be played.
If it makes you feel any better, there's coaches in the power leagues that have instant replay and all this, and they're still trying to figure it out. Even to this day, they've added more rules to it where now you could challenge whether a runner left early or not, which has become a hot topic at the level. You don't have to deal with that, at least through the regular season, but you may have to if you go to a regional, to your point, which is so fascinating where we are as a sport where we still have different rules for certain conferences versus others, and then everybody has to kind of abide by the postseason rules.
Yeah, you have the have and the have-nots, and you know even the strike zones are different. You know, the SEC strike zone is way different than, you know, the MAC strike zone. And you know, that was one of my arguments one time with an umpire. You know, I went up to the umpire and I asked him, I said, "Do you call the infield fly rule?" He was like, "What?" I said, "Do you call the infield fly rule?" And he's like, "Yeah." I said, "Well, why do you call the infield fly rule?" He said, "Because it's a rule in the book." I said, "Well, good, because on page 109 and 110, there's a clear diagram of the strike zone. It's in the book as the rule. It's not arbitrary, but none of you want to call it." So it's one of those things where, you know, don't put it in there if you're not going to call it. And, you know, I feel like the SEC and some of the Power Fives, you know, they don't call that strike zone as it sits in the book. And you can see that strike zone is much more liberal than what they are calling. And when you get to those tournaments and you're not getting those pitches that you normally get, listen, if you have to come in with some of those hitters, you know, because they're not calling those strikes, it makes it really tough on schools like us to be able to compete.
But is that like a have to have not to, or is that just an issue with the sport in general? Because I would argue in baseball, we've had the same problem with that inconsistent strike zones where certain umpires, and you know this, you played in the big leagues, for example. I'm going to use Major League Baseball as an example. Every umpire has a reputation. Oh, this one likes the high strike zone. This one doesn't. This. And I'm thinking to myself, isn't the strike zone supposed to be by the book? Why does every umpire have their own style of how to call balls and strikes? And it's been allowed. And I feel like that is it's gone down from baseball to college baseball to softball. I think that's why we're in where we're in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too, because I started to laugh when you were talking about Major League Baseball umpires. You know, one of the funniest stories I had when I was playing, I was pitching in Toronto against the Blue Jays, and I'm facing Paul Molitor. And, you know, Paul Molitor's, you know, Hall of Famer, and probably one of the better hitters that's ever played the game. And I remember having Paul Molitor down 0-2, and I threw what I thought were three really good pitches that the umpire, you know, just called balls. And I'm like, man, where's that? And then the fourth pitch, it was a 3-2 count. I threw a fastball that I thought was strike three. I started walking off the mound, and I remember the umpire was Al Clark at the time, and ended up walking Paul and then got out of the inning. And so on my way to the dugout, you know, Al's kind of walking towards me as I'm walking towards the dugout. I'm like, "Al, where are those pitches to Molitor?" He's like, "Joe, that's Paul Molitor. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame." And I said, "Al, if you give me one of those pitches, I could get to the Hall of Fame too." I kept walking, and but yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing, like you said. And then I started to think about, you know, Angel Hernandez, who has like his own cult following of how bad of an umpire he is and his missed calls, and you know, it's just kind of crazy how the umpiring isn't more universal. And you know, because when you think about it, the basketball tournament, foul's a foul. You know, it doesn't matter. My opinion, if you throw a strike, it should be called a strike, and it shouldn't be arbitrary.
100% agree. And I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. Some people have brought up robot umps. I know they've experimented with that in the minor leagues. Is that something that would even interest you in general in baseball or softball robot ops? Or do you think this is just going to be, you have to have the human element there?
I don't think you'll see that in collegiate sports, not anytime soon anyway. I don't think that they're quite there yet, robo umps. I did see the thing with the TrackMan where they can challenge the umpire, or the hitter can actually challenge, you know, the pitch, and it's kind of instant feedback of whether or not it's a strike. But I don't know if every college program is going to be able to afford a $50,000 TrackMan, you know,
for
every stadium.
No, that's very true. Very true. What softball, the big thing this year is they had a pitch clock 20 seconds. I know you haven't had to use that, but you've seen Major League Baseball go to it, college softball's going to it. You were a pitcher. Is that something that would have affected you? Is that something that would have, you know, not a big deal? What's your reaction to a pitch clock now for pitchers?
I always like to work fast, so I don't think it would have ever affected me. I think, you know, you have some of those pitchers who just kind of walk around them. And, you know, I understand the intent of the rule. I just don't know if they really thought it out completely when they decided to implement it.
As I talk to you, I'm just glaring at your Yankee jersey, folks. Not too many people can come on the show and have their Yankee jersey on the background. I think that's a first in the history of In the Circle. It's a very nice jersey. For those that may not know your story, because we talked a lot about this at length the first time you came on. We're not going to spend as much time on it, but just cliff notes on your Major League Baseball career with the Yankees and how you that translated later to becoming the college head coach in softball.
So, you know, I was originally drafted out of high school by the Atlanta Braves. I didn't sign with them. I ended up going to Jacksonville University in Jacksonville, Florida, played baseball there. And then I was redrafted again my senior year by the Pittsburgh Pirates. Spent 5 years in the minors with the Pirates, but I was in big league camp twice with the Pirates. So that's where I got to see Barry Bonds and, you know, play with Barry and all those guys and just got to see how talented of a player he was. You know, I get in arguments all the time with people about who the greatest baseball player of all time was. Steroids or not, Barry Bonds was, to me, just the epitome of the best player. I mean, he could do everything well. He could run, he could hit, he could hit for power, had a good arm. He was a gold glove, ran like a deer. He was just an incredible athlete and one of the nicest people, treated me great as a rookie, you know, always was cordial. I remember I just had my first son and I brought him into the locker room after a game. And Barry looked at me and says, "Give me that kid." And next thing I know, he takes my son and I'm standing there. And next thing I know, my son starts yanking on Barry's gold chains around his neck. And I'm thinking, good Lord, if he breaks one of these chains, that's more than what I make in a year. So I ran up the back and said, "Give me this kid. I can't deal with this anymore. The stress is killing me." And he started laughing and gave it back. But and then I was Rule 5 drafted by the Montreal Expos, now the Washington Nationals. And then I got Rule 5 drafted by the Yankees. One of the Expos, former Expos coaches, said to the Yankees, "Hey, you need to get this guy." I ended up going to AAA Columbus to start the year, pitched pretty well. And then I was really fortunate that Matt Noakes, who was a big league catcher for years, he came down on a minor league rehab assignment. And I closed a couple of games out in Columbus and pitched really well. And he came up to me, he goes, "Man, you could really help us in the big leagues." I said, "Well, when you get back there, can you say something to somebody and, you know, maybe, you know, help a brother out here?" And got the call during the All-Star break. And I got to pitch a full month in the big leagues in 94. And then I don't know how old you are, if you remember or not, but in 94, that was the year.
The strike year. Yeah. I remember that very well.
I was there for a year, for a month. And I remember I actually got the loss at Yankee Stadium against the Blue Jays. And then everybody was like, "Hey, I'll see you in a couple of weeks." And the Yankees actually sent me back down to the minors because I had options. So I could keep pitching where all the major leaguers went on strike. And then next thing you know, the season was canceled and got back to 95. And, you know, that's when I got to play with Jeter, Mariano, Andy Pettit, Jorge Posada, and all those guys.
It's a great run. That 94 Yankee team was on track to make the playoffs for the first time since 1981. And it was at that time, it was looked like we were headed for maybe a Yankees Expos World Series, because the Expos, who was the big loser of all that, had the best record in baseball. And they never recovered from that. to the point where the league folded. So it's wild there. Buck Showalter was your manager. That's I'm right. curious, did you take some things from Buck Showalter that you apply to your head coaching skills now?
Believe it or not, Eric, I've taken stuff from every manager I have ever played for. I've kind of morphed into, you know, how I like to run things. And, you know, there were certain managers that I played for. I actually just had this conversation the other day with somebody that I actually played for a bunch of managers that managed in the big leagues. I had Bobby Valentine. I had Buck Showalter. I had Jim Tracy. I had Terry Collins. So I had a lot of guys who, you know, I got to watch up close and personal and really, you know, kind of understand the way they did things. And I always said, man, you know, I understand that. I like that. And we do a lot of stuff at Marist. It's a lot of baseball stuff, but we've been successful with it because a lot of teams aren't really prepared for it when we do it.
So you play your baseball, eventually you retire. How do you get into coaching and specifically softball?
It kind of happened by accident. So I was, believe it or not, I was at a casino at a blackjack table and just making small talk with somebody. And somebody said, hey, where are you from? I said, where I was from. And the guy looked at me and goes, hey, have you ever considered being an umpire? I said, no. I said, I still give pitching lessons and, you know, I wouldn't want to be umpiring and have a kid come into the game. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm have to call balls and strikes for him. He goes, no, I'm talking about softball. I was like, softball? Why would I want to umpire softball? He goes, oh, no, the games are great. You get paid the same amount as you do for baseball, and it's half the time. And I thought about it. I was like, oh, you know what? I'll give it a whirl. And so I kind of got into softball as an umpire. But I also worked for a minor league baseball team, the Hudson Valley Renegades, which was a Tampa Bay Ray affiliate here in New York. And we would always host the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference baseball tournament. You know, we would always host it because, you know, it was a great stadium to host it. And so I became friendly with the Marist staff and the athletic director, Tim Murray. And, you know, he came up to me one day. It was back in like 2007. He said, hey, I just hired a new young head coach for softball. He goes, I'd love for you to come on board and mentor her and, you know, be part of the staff. And I tried it once and it kind of didn't work out well for me. But it turned out that it was August of 2008, like late August, athletic director from Marist, Tim Murray, called me and said, hey, my head coach just took a new job. And right now I have nobody to do it. Can you get me through the fall season so I can hire somebody? And I've been there ever since, Eric. It's kind of weird how it happened. And I went into his office in October. And I said, hey, we don't have any players coming in next year. We should probably try to recruit some kids. So he's like, okay, go take the exam and go recruit. And that recruiting class, when they became seniors, won our first MAC championship for head coach. So, and I've just been kind of building ever since.
That's unbelievable. And I know when I asked you the last time you were on, because I asked her, hey, would you want to coach in baseball, whether it be minor leagues, maybe college, et cetera. You said, no, you're happy with softball. You're hooked on this now.
I like it. I what I love about the girls and the team is, you know, they're sponges. They want to learn. You know, sometimes boys, you know, they think they know everything and, you know, they're hard to get through. And but the girls, they really want to learn and, you know, they want feedback. And I think that's one of the things that I really love. You know, sometimes they drive me crazy, but at the end of the day, I think that they respect where I came from. And even though sometimes the things that we do, they don't quite understand until they see it work. And they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. That does work. And then they have to listen to me kind of gloat a little bit because, you know, they like to give it to me when it doesn't work. I promise you.
Oh, everybody does. They trust me. I hear about it when I get a pick wrong. I understand that feeling very well. Now, throughout your during that journey that you were talking about, where you were working, you also were, way back in the day, did a little independent wrestling as well. Explain that to the audience. We talked again at length about that in the last episode, but just kind of cliff notes, you actually did professional wrestling on the side as well while you were trying to figure out the whole coaching landscape and all the other things.
Yeah, while I was working for the minor league team, The general manager came into my office one day with a wrestling promoter and said, hey, we're going to do a wrestling show at the stadium. I'm like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. Let's do it. That's great. And they're standing there in the doorway. And I'm like, what's going on? They're like, we want you to wrestle. I'm like, no, I'm not going to wrestle. I mean, I was, you know, 45 years old, 46 years old. They said, this is not a career change for me. And they left. And no lie, Eric, about 5 minutes later, they walked back. They think, we think it's a really good idea if you wrestle. And the promoter says, listen, we'll protect you. You can go in. You can put a headlock on somebody. We'll put you in a tag team match. And, you know, you tag out and get. And I said to him, I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going all the way. And I want to train. I want to do it correctly. I'm not going to just, you know, do this, you know, so-so. I want to make sure that we are going to do this correct. And I want to not embarrass myself. And I went and I trained for a good 2.5 months before the show. And I was originally supposed to be a tag team partner with Jerry the King Lawler. And I don't know if you remember this, but Jerry had a heart attack on national television.
Yep. In the commentating. And, yeah. Michael Cole there in a Raw.
On a Raw episode. And I said, oh my God, that was, and this was like 2 weeks before the event. And I remember saying, well, there goes my wrestling career. And then the promoter called me and said, hey, I have a replacement for you and it's going to be Goldust. And I said, oh, that's great. So my tag team partner went from Jerry the King Lawler to Goldust. And we fought Luke Robinson and Romeo Rosselli in a tag match. And if you haven't seen it, Eric, it is absolutely epic. I will send you the video of it. We did some stuff. Romeo came up with some stuff. And even Dustin was looking at it like, what are you doing? But looking back on it now, we made history with some of the stuff that we did. We did a skit where I actually pitched against Romeo in the ring. It was absolutely hysterical. If you haven't seen it, you are going to die laughing.
That was about a decade ago.
Yeah,
because I remember specifically that Raw that you're referring to, where Jerry Lawler had a legit heart attack to the point where he almost died.
That's right.
And that was, I believe, in Canada, because I remember CM Punk, who I'm wearing the shirt as I'm doing the interview, was in a feuding with Lawler during that time frame, and Bret Hart was there and Cena and all that. And then you mentioned Goldust. For those that don't know, that's Dustin Rhodes. The son of the late Dusty Rhodes and the brother of Cody Rhodes, who's obviously all over the news now as the new WWE champion and was on the Today Show, just won WrestleMania against Roman Reigns. So it's kind of ironic that had to kind of get a reaction. You wrestled a tag team partner with one of the Rhodes family members, which is that in itself is amazing. And here we are this weekend making history as the first Rhodes to ever win a WWE title.
And still to this day, Dustin still follows our Maris Softball Twitter account. And because that was the only one I had at the time. And that was before Twitter kind of really blew up. And he, you know, he's been phenomenal. What a great person to be able to work with. And, you know, he had some struggles with life and some trials and tribulations, and you know he came through it, and he came out on the good side, and I'm just really proud to say that I know him, and just a phenomenal family.
Yeah, he's working at All Elite Wrestling. He was in a suite in Philadelphia, not too far away, to watch his brother win that WWE Universal title, the first in the Rhodes family. That was a big storyline. Finished the story, deal. So that's pretty sweet. So I will leave you with this last question. What is this Maris team in 2024, as you move towards the next month here, and next, you know, the conference tournament get going, what do you have to do to finish your story this season in the way you want it to be finished?
You know, honestly, I'm excited for our conference, Eric. I love the parity in our conference and, the fact that any team in our conference can beat any other team. I think for me to finish the story is to treat every team like they're Oklahoma. And if we do that and we come out and play our game and be as prepared as we try to be all the time, then hopefully the story can write itself.
Is this the deepest you ever seen the league as far as depth?
Yeah, I think the league is just good across the board. And, when you think about, you know, Northeast schools, you know, you don't think powerhouse softball. You just don't. And I think that it's a testament to the coaches in our conference who are just, you know, really doing a good job of recruiting good players. And the challenge now, honestly, is just to try to keep them. You know, with the transfer portal and NIL deals. We don't have NIL deals at Marist, you know, but what we do have is we have a great education. We have a campus in Florence, Italy, that we allow our kids to, you know, study abroad as part of their scholarship and, you know, just try to do the right things by the kids. And I, you know, my recruiting spiel is the same to every one of them. I want two things to happen when they, when they graduate. I want to be the first reference on their resume, and I want to be invited to their weddings. And I'm not necessarily going to go to their weddings, but if I get the invitation, you know, then that tells me that I made a difference in their life. And, you know, right now my wife gets mad at me because we keep getting all these wedding invitations and we can't afford to go to them all. So I'll take that as a good thing.
That's a good positive. Trust me. I know that feeling very well. Well, I appreciate you coming on with us. You're in the middle of a big series. But I really appreciate you coming on because I wanted to get you on at some point this season. And I thought this was the perfect time. I thought of you there with WrestleMania just concluding as both of us being a wrestling guy, but more importantly, how great your season is going to this point. And you know, you got a lot of big games coming ahead. And I wanted to kind of get the word out about not about your program to most of the audience. So thanks for doing this during this time period. Always enjoy talking to you. I'm sure we'll do it again down the road, but good luck the rest of the season.
I look forward to it, and thanks for having me.
And thanks to Coach for joining us and spending some time with Eric during the that interview took place earlier in the week while Marist was getting ready for that series versus Siena that they beat the Saints in two straight. Now, I mentioned the doubleheader, the Gap versus Lehigh, coming up on Saturday, a doubleheader there. And then they go back to play in the MAC. They still got a doubleheader. They still got a three-game set versus Iona, where right now is those two teams jockeying for position to get that regular season title. And trust me, I love saying this because Tony Kornheiser says it this way, in the MAC. Trust me, folks, I will try and get that fight with Tony, Mr. Kornheiser, saying that before the season is done. Marist a game back in the win column over Iona. Iona 9-3 in conference. Marist 8-3. Canisius 7-4. Marist 9-3 after their doubleheader win. And they're right now trying again, knocking on the door with Iona in the conference. They play Iona next weekend in Poughkeepsie. First place in the regular season championship potentially on the line between Marist and Iona. They still got series with St. Peter's and Canisius and Fairfield to end the regular season. But this Red Foxes team, again, I saw them up close and in person. Keely Myers, who has set a career high in strikeouts for the season during their last series, they are really finding themselves. And Maya McDonald, a senior from Camp Hill, Pennsylvania, had a strong weekend last weekend as they won the series versus Mount St. Mary's. And Myers, as I mentioned, a grad student from Latrobe, a 1.87 ERA. She's been a workhorse for them last weekend versus Mount St. Mary's. So we'll keep an eye for Marist and where they will be in the end of the regular season. Now, the end of the regular season is about a month away, and Mr. Lopez has some new bracketology out. I got some thoughts about that. And the big series that will go a long way in determining, could somebody host over a team that was supposed to host last year? Of course, I'm talking about Texas State and Louisiana. All that coming up as we wrap up this edition of In the Circle. Now, within the circle, you know what we get to do. We get to talk about bracketology. We get to talk about the players of the week. We get to talk about the transfer portal. All of the good stuff. But if you want to get all the good stuff, you got to find us on D1Softball.com. And for those of you who want to get an annual subscription to D1 Softball, we happen to have something a little special for you. Go to D1Softball.com, get an annual subscription, and use the promo code CIRCLE25, C-I-R-C-L-E 25. And there, you will get 25% off your annual subscription to D1Saltball.com. That means you have access to Eric Lopez's Bracketology. You have access to the transfer tracker. You have access to the coaching carousel, the assistant coaching carousel, all the great features that you will get to read from Graham Hayes, Rhiannon Pocky, and our student writers who are working with us at D1 Softball throughout this season. D1Softball.com. Get an annual subscription. Use the code CIRCLE25, 25% off. Use the code, ladies and gentlemen. Now, apparently, Mr. Lopez can't be bothered with showing up on the podcast today. He's so tired from having to do UCF's no-hitter versus JU on Wednesday night that he just messaged me and said that he is taking the show off. Kind of like how I took the show off, but you still heard my... Nonetheless. Eric did leave me some notes about his bracketology that came out this past week, again, on D1Softball.com. The thing that I'm fascinated the most about, ladies and gentlemen, is who he has his last four in and his first four out. His last four in, he has Louisville, Wichita State, Virginia, who lost to Liberty in the midweek, and South Alabama. His first four out, he has Utah, Ole Miss, Nebraska, and Tulsa. Tulsa was knocking on the door of a big win Wednesday night versus Oklahoma State, but as seems to happen, coaches asked for a review with a runner leaving early. The runner did leave early. That happened to be the third out of the inning, which was the final out of the game, and Oklahoma wins on a game-winning review, 3-2. That would have been another big feather in the cap for Tulsa if they wouldn't have been able to get that victory in Stillwater versus the Cowgirls. But be that as it may, Louisville, Wichita State, we talked about Wichita State and how they need to get themselves going in the American Conference. Wichita State goes to Tampa to take on USF. The Bulls riding high after a huge victory in Gainesville versus Florida 7-4 on Wednesday night. The first time USF went to Gainesville and beat the Gators since 2012. And as Derek Sharp reminded everybody, Derek Sharp, the radio voice of USF, the last time USF beat Florida in Gainesville, that was the year where the Bulls went all the way to the Women's College World Series with Sarah Nevins and company. So Wichita State, a big series for them. They have to take 2 out of 3 versus USF, otherwise their life on the inside looking out may be reversed, and they may be on the outside looking in. Other big series in terms of teams on the bubble, Ole Miss. Eric was very confident 2 weeks ago that all 13 SEC teams could make the field. Ole Miss has started to stumble a little bit in the SEC and also in non-conference play as well. The Rebels will look to get back on track this weekend as they'll have a series versus, they'll have Western Kentucky for a three-game set. If you're Ole Miss, you're 21-18, you're 3-12 in the conference, you cannot afford to lose that series versus Western Kentucky because you got Southern Miss, you go at Texas A&M, host Auburn at Arkansas to end the regular season. They were supposed to play a doubleheader at Louisiana Tech, but that got postponed. They're going to work to see if they can reschedule that doubleheader based on what else Louisiana Tech has on the docket. It's possible they could do it. I see they have a Tuesday on the 23rd, a Wednesday the 24th, that those two teams could potentially play. It'll likely be on that Tuesday the 23rd because Ole Miss will have conference games from here on out. Louisiana Tech only has one more midweek at the end of the season. That's on April 30th. as they host McNeese in Ruston. So keep an eye on when Ole Miss and Louisiana Tech reschedule that doubleheader, because it could have significance for the Rebels, not just being making the NCAA tournament, but actually being eligible to be in the NCAA tournament. Because remember, you have to be at least 500 or better to be in consideration for the NCAA tournament. South Alabama. Now, South Alabama, they have them. South Alabama will try and get themselves back again versus Georgia Southern. And you look at the Jaguars going into this weekend. They enter with a 35 RPI. They have a great strength of schedule. They have the mark. They have the marquee wins. They beat Notre Dame, beat South Carolina, beat Alabama, beat Arkansas, but they got swept by Louisiana. They took a game versus Texas State. They were supposed to play at Mississippi State on Wednesday, but like Louisiana Tech and Ole Miss, that got postponed. They're going to try and get that rescheduled. And that's important for South Alabama because the look at the rest of their schedule, Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Troy, Southern Miss, if anything, they may knock down their RPI. So the Jaguars have to win all of those series. They may have to sweep three of those four series and then make a deep run in the Sun Belt tournament in San Marcos the second week of May if they want to solidify their spot in the NCAA tournament. The next four out, you got Louisiana Tech, Michigan, Indiana, and Notre Dame. But again, the Big Ten taking a big hit with their lack of strength in the conference. Northwestern clearly a lock in the field of 64 as of right now. Penn State, they are a 3 seed in Starkville. So the Big Ten currently only has 2 teams in the field. And the next closest ones are the next 4 out in Michigan and Indiana. So the Big Ten has a lot of work to do to get themselves 3 teams in that tournament. And we're a month away from Selection Sunday. So look to see what Michigan and Indiana does this weekend. Michigan will be hosting Iowa. Iowa has won their first 2 Big Ten series. Meanwhile, Nebraska goes to Piscataway to take on Rutgers. Rutgers took a doubleheader on Wednesday versus Maryland. So the Scarlet Knights will look to try and trip up the Cornhuskers and make life for them a lot more difficult, that being the Cornhuskers anyway, to get into the NCAA tournament. Now, the series that everyone's going to be looking forward to this weekend, and rightfully so, resides in the Sun Belt. Texas State versus Louisiana. Right now, Eric has Texas State as his 16th and final national seed. They almost added to that resume, had the lead late versus Texas on Wednesday night in Austin before they fell to the Longhorns 6-4. Right now, Texas State is scheduled to host as the 16th national seed. They have Baylor, Northwestern as a 3, and Eastern Kentucky in their regional. This is the week that we've talked about on this podcast for the last month that this will decide whether Texas State will have a legitimate chance to host or if they will have to go back to the drawing board. They beat Baylor as we expected. They took 2 out of 3 versus Troy, which hurt them. They had the loss versus Texas. So right now in this stretch, they're 3-2. They have to win the series versus Louisiana. If they lose this series versus the Raging Cajuns, their hosting outlook takes a significant blow. Not saying that they're going to be out to host, but when you look at the rest of the schedule for the Bobcats, at UTSA, at Louisiana Monroe, at Southern Miss, hosting Marshall, and they host the Sun Belt Tournament. If they lose that Louisiana series, they may have to, at best, go 8-2, 9-1, and then win the Sun Belt Tournament, which will likely have to include beating Southern, beating South Alabama and Louisiana to get themselves back in a hosting conversation. They have an 18 RPI. They have a 27 strength of schedule. But the thing that you look at Texas State with their losses, they have five quad three losses. That's losses to teams 51-100 in the RPI, and a quad four loss. That's teams that's 101 or lower. And I'll ask Eric this when he returns back to the show. What is Texas State's resume? And let's compare it side by side to when Louisiana was supposed to host and didn't last year, and what UCF's resume was when they hosted in 2022. I will be fascinated to see those three resumes, how they stack up, and what Texas Tech's chances would be. Because right now, Baylor, they're injured. I don't know what's going to happen with them. Could they hold? I don't think Baylor's going to need a miracle run to host, in my opinion. Florida State, they lost Michaela Edenfield to a broken finger. She's going to be missing some significant time. Does Florida State have enough to possibly where they can host? We have to wait and see. Virginia Tech is another possibility in the ACC, but they lost the series last weekend to Duke. Duke, oh, by the way, lost at home on Wednesday to Tina Prater and Campbell. So that takes us. That's a tough loss for Duke. Duke right now, they're the number 8 national seed. They're battling with Florida, who lost to USF. So there's that whole aspect of things. Right now, it feels very comfortable to say that 12 of the 16 hosts are locks, and two are getting close to lock territory. It's all about those last two national seeds. Right now, it's Mississippi State and Texas State. You got teams like Florida State, as I mentioned. You got Virginia Tech. Washington, who's still lurking around. You got Clemson, who will likely be without Valerie Cagle. John Rittman said this past week during media availability, Cagle is in the concussion protocol, so she might not be available when Clemson takes on Duke. Keep that in mind if the Tigers lose to the Blue Devils this weekend and how it impacts their chances to potentially host in 2024. A lot of softball still to be played, a lot of moving parts, but things are starting to get a little clearer in terms of the hosting situation, and probably seeding will start to be more locked in, although the conference tournaments will have a big determining factor on what happens with that. So that's enough of us yapping about the tournament and the bracketology and all that good stuff. So that's going to do it for this episode of In the Circle. We again thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Thanks again to Penn State freshman sensation Bridget Namath for joining us. Thanks to Marist head coach Joe Asanio for joining us on the podcast. Thanks to you for listening to our podcast. And remember, folks, there are more of us and there are of them. So for Coach Asanio, for Bridget Namath, and for my partner in his absence, Eric Lopez, my name is Victor Anderson. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of In the Circle on D1 Softball. Top Podcaster, out. Good night, Canada.